Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, and I'm here with associate producer Ellen Cortesoja. On the phone with us today is Tony Hale, the CEO of Chartbeat.com, which provides real-time analytics to some of the largest sites on the web, including CNN, The Guardian, Al Jazeera, and The New York Times. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, this is one of the interviews we're doing in partnership with the Liquid Newsroom to preview the International Journalism Festival, which takes place in Perugia, Italy from April 30th to May 4th. Tony's going to be one of the speakers there. And you can find out more about the festival at journalismfestival.com. So let's start off with there. What do you think you're going to be talking about when you're in Italy?
The panel that I'm on is called Metrics Beyond Page Views, which is about the importance of analytics in a broader context and delivering the right message. And the kind of predominant thing that we're going to be talking about is the kind of challenge that page views have posed as a metric of success for media companies, in that whilst they do directly relate to impressions and therefore advertising revenue, they also don't actually relate to the quality of content. They relate to the performance of a link to content. And as a result, you've had this very kind of conflicted feeling about metrics in general. And I think the discussion that the panel is hoping to have, and we've got some great people on the panel, is around what are the ways in which we can balance the right metrics from a business perspective in terms of our long-term goals, but also metrics that actually speak to content, to people's actual attention and time, and making sure that our metrics are more aligned with the mission of great journalism.
Well, and that's kind of interesting because it's something that I think about. I work on a website, and not that our website does this, but you know, you go out and you build a news site, you want to be taken seriously, and you end up finding yourselves creating a place where people can view cat videos or pet photos or baby photos or something like that, because that gets a lot of click-throughs. But that doesn't necessarily solve your mission or sort of define who you are, hopefully. You wrote this article for Time.com called What You Think You Know About the Web Is Wrong. And what is it you think that people know or don't know about the web, or what they think is wrong?
I should clarify that. I think there's been things that people think are instinctively true, but they've not been acting in that way in some ways. But there's kind of a few key myths that I think have come about, just because even though the entire web has kind of moved forward at an incredible pace over the last 20 years, the general metrics that we've used to analyze and understand behavior and to define value haven't really changed since 1994. It's still impressions and click-throughs. And when you're looking at what we call the click web, you get one picture. But when you look at what happens between the clicks, when you look at people's actual attention and what people are doing versus just what they're clicking on, then you get a very, very different picture. And so a few things come out of that. And to your earlier point about cats and so forth, what people click on doesn't necessarily mean they read it. So one of the things that we found is that in general, about 55% of all people that click through to a page on the web don't actually stay on that page for more than 15 seconds. They're not really engaged or attentive for any real period of time. They're kind of clicking in but almost immediately bailing or just not engaging at all with that piece of content. And with article pages, it improves somewhat to around about two-thirds. But even so, just because someone is clicking, it doesn't mean they're reading. Secondly, we've had this whole idea about sharing as a kind of proxy for quality. And actually, what the data suggests is that while sharing is a pretty good correlate for increased amount of traffic, it doesn't necessarily suggest that the more an article is shared, the more time people actually spend with that article, the more attention it accrues, and so forth. And that's been one of the kind of proxies that that people have been using that's just not borne out by the data. And then there's also these kind of myths that we have around the advertising side of the business, one of which is that native advertising has come up as this kind of grand new place for journalists to kind of fund their businesses. It's the savior of journalism and so forth. And unfortunately, for most native advertising, it's just not true. It's just not working. Where you, as I said before, you see about two-thirds of people engaging with a normal piece of content. On most native advertising, that drops to about one-third. So you've got a group of challenges there. By the way, some native advertising does work. We can get into that later if you wish.
Sure.
And then also, one of the things we talk about is that people have been talking about the problem of banner advertising, which is still, by the way that most businesses and media sites are driven. They're driven by banner advertising. That's how they make their money. And there's been this general perception that banner advertising just doesn't work at all. And that's not strictly true. A lot of banner advertising doesn't work if it's not in a place where people can see it. But if you put an ad with good creative in front of people where they have enough time to be able to see it, then that can be incredibly effective. The problem has been we're not putting the ads in the right places, not where people's attention is. So we kind of delved into a few kind of different myths on that front, and it was fascinating to see the response from across the web.
Let's go back. I want to talk or touch on a couple of things. First, when you talk about native advertising, what does that mean?
So native advertising, and by the way, there's a bunch of different words for this, depending on who's selling it at what moment. It can be called bespoke content. It can be called any number of things. But native advertising is quite simply content that has been created not simply for the purpose of a media site creating content, but to advance a brand's goals in some way.
Okay.
It can either be created by the publisher, or it can be created by the advertiser. But it is intended in some ways to mimic the normal content on the site, but to have dual goals of having people read it and to forward the brand's goals.
Okay. And then when you were talking about placement of banner ads, I think most people, when they think banner ads, this is something that's going to be at the top of the page. And I think you had diagrams with your story about this, that people are actually looking either at the fold or below the fold more often. And then,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, and it's almost intuitive. If you just take a moment to think about how you read an article as well, you know, you click on a link, you immediately scroll down past all the cruft at the top to where the story actually is. So that banner ad at the very top of the page, even though it scores well on kind of traditional metrics of, like, you know what, the impression was served, and, you know, it was in a viewable place on the browser, it's just not in view long enough for someone to see it. And actually, the areas that have been traditionally considered to be less valuable, areas below the fold and so forth, it's where people actually are. It's where their attention is. So why would you not advertise where people's attention is? There's almost a scientific consensus now. There's data from Google, from Yahoo, from Microsoft, from Chartbeat, all of which suggest that the more time you have in front of someone's face, the better that advertising will perform.
It's interesting you're talking about below the fold and everything, is that if we think about the way a website is traditionally designed, where you have all of your main features and everything up towards the top and then sort of the extraneous stuff down below. And we're talking in a traditional sense. I mean, if you're, you're talking about responsive design, where things are kind of laid out in a mobile sort of layout where you're constantly scrolling, then, you know, there is no fold technically. It's whatever you can get yourself down to. So what does this all mean for a website? What is it for a website designer, for somebody who's putting content on a page?
For people who are putting content on the page, and in particular, it has more of an impact. Well, there are two key impacts. For a designer who's trying to think about what we call the kind of the attention web, they should be trying to design a page that is not just designed to kind of cram in as many things as possible, but to try and hold someone's attention for as long as possible. Because the longer that page can hold someone's attention, whether it's through quality of and clarity of design, or whether it's through fantastic content, ideally both, the more valuable that page will become in terms of its actual potential impact. And the second thing that people on the monetization side should be aware of is that if you're driving people to your site, you should probably put the ads where those people are actually spending their time. So if you think that putting the ads at the very, very top is a great way to reach everyone, that might not actually be true. It's important to kind of look at the data and say, okay, how do we optimize so that we have the right number of people coming to our content, they have a great experience when they come to that content, and when they're there, they actually see the advertising that supports it.
So I imagine that the answer that you might give me is going to be very wonky and above my head, but for somebody like me who just is kind of engineering ignorant to begin with, I just can't even imagine how you would start to go about this, to go into not just the clicks and the page views like you are saying in the article, but to try to figure out how someone is just navigating throughout a page. So if there is a common sense English way to explain that, I would love to hear it.
Sure. So if every site was having to do it on their own, then they'd have exactly that challenge. Luckily, there are kind of technology companies out there, which Chartbeat is one, that exist to kind of help on this front. But here's what can give you a kind of a better sense of this, I hope, which is when you're reading a normal piece of content, and next time you're doing this, just pay attention to what you're doing, and you'll see this happen. When you're reading a normal piece of content, in general, you're making some kind of slight mouse movement, you're scrolling a little bit, you're tapping a key in some way, on average, every 1.1 seconds. For 95% of people, 95% of the time, they take some kind of human-computer interaction within 4.8 seconds when they're attentively looking at the screen. So what we can do there, then, is we can ask the question, and this is where technology comes in. We can ask the question every second, have we heard you do something in the last 5 seconds that suggests that you're active or not? If we have, we can say, okay, you know what? This second is active. And from that, we can start to develop this wonderful picture of total engagement for that page. And that can come across as both kind of the average engage time, so the amount an average person is spending on an article. It can be expressed in terms of scroll depth, where are they spending that attention. And it can also be combined with both kind of users and time, just the total amount of engage time, or the total amount of attention that you can get. So even though the technology is relatively complex, the kind of core lessons that you can bring out of it that enable you to kind of compare and contrast both content, design, and what's working, what's not, are actually relatively simple. And it's simply, how much attention am I accruing, and where is that attention accruing?
It's interesting that you're sort of taking this approach. I think you call it the attention web, where you're actually sort of measuring the way the people's attention on the website and on a particular story or what they're doing when they get to a website. Especially when we look back, that so many decisions have been made in web advertising, in web content, based strictly on clicks. You know how viral a headline is, or you know how often you share something. So, and let me ask you about that. When you mentioned sharing, I mean that's something that's been pushing for the last few years. Is that, you know, how many likes does something have? How many shares does it have on Facebook and on Twitter? Are you saying that that's not as important, or maybe that's important in a different way, but we need to be looking at something else?
Oh, I'm saying it's very important. Let me be clear on this. Like, social traffic is one of the best and the largest new ways of being able to acquire new visitors coming to your site so they can get to know who you are. If you tweet or if you put something on Facebook, there will always be some kind of traffic boost, because you'll never get less traffic as a result of you posting. So there'll always be some kind of positive correlation in terms of the data. What we don't want to do, though, is we don't want to start making assumptions around that data, around people's behavior once they actually get to a page. And what our data shows is this, that even if you have a tremendous number of tweets or a tremendous number of likes, it does not necessarily mean that the amount of actual time that is accrued, the amount of attention that is accrued on that page, is actually significantly greater. There's simply no relationship. So what we're saying, quite simply, is that social sharing is a great way to kind of drive traffic to your article. But in the end, it's a measure of social sharing. It's not a measure of the amount of engagement that you actually got in the article itself.
Well, I think information like this is actually kind of heartening for somebody who's a journalist and is trying to, create content of some importance. That it seems to say that it's not just so much to get people on the page, but you want to engage them. And so the richness of your content then has sort of importance. And then how you place that, how you place your advertising around that to support that. Let's jump over to advertising for a second. I know a lot of the conversations about journalism that we've been having for over a decade and we'll probably continue to have another decade is just about sustainability. How does this, for people who want to sort of promote successful websites through advertising, how does this type of data help those websites?
So I think there's two key things in which we can kind of dive into here. So the first thing is, to have a sustainable website, to have a sustainable media operation, it requires not just that you're able to kind of drive traffic anymore, because as you know, we're now monetizing in a variety of ways. There's been the rise of kind of metered sites and paywalls. There's been people running events. There's native advertising and so forth. We're not just relying on pure advertising anymore. And all of those things, including advertising, to be honest, require not just traffic, but an audience who knows who you are, likes what you do, and comes back. That's what the advertising people are selling. They're not selling random traffic unless they're a massive network. And so for you to be able to build a sustainable business means being able to build a sustainable audience. And that's where this kind of engagement attention data makes such a difference. Because one of the things that we found is that if you can hold someone on your site for 3 minutes, they are twice as likely to return as if you hold them for 1 minute. So if you're focusing on engagement, you're not just having to start from scratch every morning trying to go out and find traffic. You're building a loyal returning audience, and that's incredibly valuable. On the second side of things, directly speaking to advertising itself, there's two challenges that the advertising side of a publisher has. One is, yes, can we deliver the impressions and so forth that that we have contracted to deliver? That's the kind of base level of performance. But if you're a quality publisher, you're also ideally charging some kind of premium on that advertising. And the way that you are able to prove that premium is from saying the quality of the impressions that you derive, both from the content that's, that surrounds it and from the attention that that audience has at that moment. That is what justifies the premium. So the attention data that you can now get focuses not just on building this loyal, sustainable audience over time that you can monetize, but also focus on how you justify the kind of premium prices that quality publishers should be able to charge.
Yeah, that seems to be like the old argument, or at least the old rationale for like magazine advertising, that you've got a running magazine. So, you know, you build an audience of people who want to get that information, and then you reach out to advertisers who are selling shoes or workout gear or whatever. It's sort of building a quality audience, one that comes to you for a particular reason, and then that's kind of what you sell. To sort of wrap this up, which websites do you see as taking this approach and doing well with it, succeeding? Who can you point to?
So I think there's a variety of sites across the web who've been doing this well. I think for me, one of the standout ones that have been both looking at data and engagement and building a loyal audience, but also looking at how they can prove to the advertisers the kind of premiums that they're able to charge, is the Financial Times in the UK. I think that for me is the one that almost everyone looks to as someone who is innovating and really kind of getting ahead of the crowd. So they are my kind of gold standard for the successful use of data, particularly around the idea of attention.
As far as attention web and people who are doing it well and people who are starting to gain traction, how much uncharted territory do you think is still out there?
Oh, a lot. And that's the fun part. We've spent 20 years living in Skinner boxes, being told that all that matters is that we just click, click, click. And we've devalued content for the longest time as a result. And now what we're starting to see is what I think of as a very optimistic change, where actually the quality of content matters again, and where the kind of metrics of currency and of value are changing. And that, to me, is a tremendously exciting time where we're going to discover brand new ways of reaching and serving audiences. It's going to have an impact upon design, where we're going to have cleaner, more frictionless design. It's going to have an impact on a whole range of things. And for me, this is what's exciting. It's an opportunity to discover a new world where we start to value what actually matters, which is people and their attention.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I think that's a great place to stop on a nice positive note. Thank you very much, Tony, for talking to us. How can people find out more about you, follow you on Twitter, et cetera?
Yes, I am Arctic Tony on Twitter. That's ArcticTony. Or they can follow the Chartbeat blog, which is blog.chartbeat.com, where we put a whole bunch of data up fairly regularly about this kind of stuff. It's always useful for me to read. I'm sure it would be also useful for other people to read as well.
Well, I'll make sure we put a link to that on with this interview. And thank you again for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. This interview was set up in partnership with Stefan Conrath of Liquid Newsroom. The podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Was that a dog in the background I hear?
Sorry, that was my. Was that a problem in the?
No, recording? No, no. That's fine.
I bet it's great.
It's my Shiba Inu who has been sitting outside the conference room because we have dogs in our office. She's been very, very keen to kind of have a give her. take on the subject of the attention web.
Yeah,
she wants to get on the podcast.
She wants to talk about those cat photos, I think.
She's a princess, and she demands to be the center of attention at all times.
Okay. Well, I'll let you get back to your princess. Thank you very much for giving us this time. This is fascinating.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys. It's been fun.
Okay, fine.